Hi there. Welcome and thank you for listening in. I'm super stoked to have you with me. My name is Philip Hartman and Being Dad is a show for dads. I meet and speak to unique dads, asking them to impart their wisdom and to share their experiences as dads with us. The reason for being dad is my own story. I became a father 5 times within 13 months. Yes, 5 times, 13 months. I was seriously underprepared and I struggled to find inspiring content for myself. By meeting and connecting with these men, I'm trying to learn all there is about being a dad. We cover heart-to-heart topics between two dads, and our aim is to inspire other fathers. And with this, hopefully we can make a positive impact on families around the world.
So the best advice I can give myself as a dad is to say sorry. Say sorry a lot. And most importantly, explain why I was wrong. I'm not very good at this, but I did it the other day with my eldest daughter and I found it really, really powerful. And I felt it brought us closer together than anything else we'd done actually in the last few weeks.
My next dad is an amazing man. His name is Richard Walton. We had never met before our session, but when he left my house after the podcast, I felt inspired and empowered, and I decided right there I wanted to be his friend. Richard is amazing. He's honest and very funny, and I'm so stoked I found him as a dad for the show. Not only is Richard a successful serial entrepreneur and a dad of 4 kids, 3 girls and 1 boy, I could tell immediately that Richard had done some deep introspection about being a father, his family, and the values in his life. Richard is a man who follows his heart and therefore seems to make really good decisions in his life when it counts. At one stage, he actually decided to move to the jungle in Costa Rica at a time when his first baby was 7 months and his wife was pregnant with their second child. They were going to stay for 6 months and ended up living there for 8 years. The result of this was that Richard was able to literally spend and live the first 8 years of his children's lives together with them. In this episode, Richard and myself speak about some of the challenges we face as entrepreneurs and dads. We chat about education, traveling, and how, within a mere 4 years, Richard built a company with over 120 employees, growing at an insane rate, all because he watched his son playing soccer on his own through the kitchen window. And of course, the ups and downs of that journey. The most powerful takeaways for me: say sorry to your children and do it often. Treat your kids like adults, especially when it comes to their emotions. And a life hack: always offer to pick up your kids from parties at night. Today we have Richard Walton. Richard, thank you very much for sitting with me. I'm super stoked to have you.
Pleasure to be here.
I would jump straight in. You have 3 kids, 4 kids, 3 daughters and 1 boy.
Yes.
From 14 to 8. And with that, I would just say over to you. Please tell us a little about yourself.
Cool. Well, thank you for having me here, first of all. So I'm 44 years old, originally from the UK, but I'm now living in Cape Town, only about 5 miles away from you down the road, actually.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah. So I guess probably the best place to start my kind of journey as a father, which is very much linked to one of being an entrepreneur, is probably about 5 years before I actually became a father. So
just give us some context.
Yeah. So
what year was this?
Wow. So I guess it was 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Year 2000. So recently met my wife on an island called Roatan, which is off the coast of Honduras. My wife's American. I was setting up my first company, and we were setting up a marine research project. For me, it was purely a lifestyle business. I wanted to live on an island, and I was very into freediving at the time. And I was young, I was 24, hadn't really thought about much about doing anything else apart from freediving and working on this conservation program with a good friend of mine who came out. And I bumped into my wife, actually towards the end of our stay. It was quite funny. It was only a 3-mile by 1-mile island. And she was teaching on the island and working as a dive instructor. And so we met, fell in love, got married very, very quickly. And we then spent the next 5 years, some of my happiest years, traveling around the world, living in places like the cloud forest in Ecuador.
Wow. I want your life.
Living in a beach bar in Tulum. There was no other hotels in those days in Tulum. And there was the only one beach bar, and the only room they had was above the bar.
But that's Mexico.
Yeah, Mexico.
Yeah. And, good surf, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, not where we were at that time.
Yeah.
But it was on the Caribbean side.
Yeah.
But we just had an amazing 5 years. And actually, that's for me, that was one of the benefits of getting married young, is that, you know, talking about being the parents, you know, people are getting married later and later and seem to have children quite quickly. We had 5 years being together without having kids.
Yeah, and luckily sharing the same passion. Obviously, you guys traveling and seeing the world, exploring together. Yeah.
Exactly. And really getting to know each other.
Yeah.
When I look back on those times, yeah, I was very, very happy. And so anyway, we had this life of freedom and adventure. And then children came along. So my wife got pregnant. In fact, I've got a wonderful picture of her about 7 or 8 months pregnant in the Amazon rainforest with a machete showing off her belly. And we decided to do the sensible thing, which was to move back to England. My business had been growing quite well. Head office was in the UK. And
just explain what you were doing, because people would wonder, like, how can he travel living in beach bars?
Yeah, sorry. Right, so the company was called GVI. We essentially set up community development and environmental projects with local NGOs or governmental partners. And then we arrange for groups or individual students, generally, high school or university, mainly from the US and the UK, to visit these projects and to assist the local NGOs. At the same time, kind of getting life and work experience. So they kind of pay for those trips. So essentially the participant wins and the local NGO.
Yeah, and it counts as well. For the marks.
Yes, yeah. And a lot of the programs count for academic credits as well.
Amazing.
Yeah. So we got to go to and see some really amazing things. You know, we're allowed to see things that most tourists can't.
I think I've been to one of these things in Costa Rica for the sloths.
Yes.
They have these amazing sanctuaries, actually, yes. Where they say they get electrocuted all the time. And
that's right.
Traveling through the forest and then suddenly there's a line and that line happens to be electricity.
That's right. And
they get burnt.
Yeah. And if you drive along, you can actually see that they've started putting little bridges across the wires. Yes.
Wow.
So
that was a special experience.
And the howler monkeys as well. Big problem with electrocution with the howler monkeys.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
Sorry, so then you moved to England.
So then we moved to England, where my first child, Josephine, was born.
Yes.
So as I said, there's a life of freedom. And suddenly I was living in a tiny terrace house.
Box. Shoebox.
In rainy England. And I was going to work every day in an office, which I hadn't ever done before. The reason I set up my company was to have the polar opposite of this kind of lifestyle.
Yeah, 100%.
But I thought it was the right thing to do. So suddenly I had lost my wife to a child who has been my best friend and traveling partner.
That's how it felt?
Yes.
Because that's quite drastic.
It did.
She was like...
It did. It really did.
I mean, you continued. You're still together to this
absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely.
Right?
And we're very, very happy. But...
of course, the baby takes precedence.
Of course it does. And I understood that. And I'm not criticizing her at all. But that's how I felt.
Yeah, I have the same.
Yeah.
I mean, my wife and I used to travel and used to do a lot of stuff together. I mean, we're both from Munich. We both live in Cape Town. We used to travel the world. Amongst other things, Costa Rica and that for months. And we always used to do stuff. She's my best friend. And now she's like obviously occupied with children a lot. Yeah. And I am too. So the same counts for her.
Yeah, you just start not having much time alone together.
Yeah. Someone told me a powerful thing 2 days ago. Actually, EO member from Canada.
Yeah.
A guy I told you about. He said, we made a conscious decision that we come first. The two parents, they come first as a relationship.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is that if they manage to have a decent foundation as a basis, the kids will be happy too.
Yeah.
If they can't manage to stay together and to have a happy relationship, the kids will suffer too. Yeah. So I think it's a good decision, a very wise decision.
Very wise.
To make it from the start.
Yeah.
But sorry, you were in a shoebox and very unhappy.
I was. And then? I started drinking too much, not doing any exercise. I just got very unhealthy.
From being an active free diver, traveling to an outdoor person.
To sitting in an office, inside a house in a town in England.
In the rain.
In the rain.
Yeah.
And not getting much sleep.
Yeah.
And so when my child was about 3 months old, I had to go and get a full physical for some life insurance that my bank had forced me to take out to guarantee some loans. And it was a life-changing moment because this doctor, and I don't think many doctors are like this, pretty much sat me down and said, if you carry on like this, you're going to be dead by the time you're 50.
You were then 26.
Yeah, 26 or something. 26. Yeah, 26.
Yeah.
27.
Wow.
And that's quite a big thing. And it particularly hit me because I had a 3-month-old baby at home. And that's when you really start thinking about wanting to be around. Before that, you know, you might take quite big risks before kids come along. And so I went home, said to Jenna, my wife, I said, you know, told her what had happened. And she said, well, why don't you start going to the gym or running or all these things? And I said, I hate all that stuff. I don't like running. I hate the gym. She said, well, what have you always wanted to do that you think would get you outside and get you active? I said, well, I've always wanted to be a surfer.
Yeah.
And actually, we'd just spent the year before a couple of months in Costa Rica where I tried it and loved it. And we really loved Costa Rica as a country. And then my amazing wife, who was about to come pregnant for the second time, said, well, why don't we move out there?
Wow.
So off we went.
I want your life and your wife.
And we moved to Costa Rica and with a 7-month-old baby, and she was pregnant with a second one.
Wow.
To this beautiful little town. And the plan was just to go for 6 months.
Yeah. Recharge batteries.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd be able to run the business from there. I didn't think any of us thought
this we could be for context, there. This was in 2004.
Yes, 2000.
So pretty much when I came to Cape Town, I came in 2003.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, but exactly.
Around I also stumbled upon the fact that you can run a business remotely. Everybody was like, yeah, you guys are crazy.
Yeah.
You can't run a business from Africa to Germany. Of course you can. Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, it was about the time that the internet was just getting fast enough for Skype calls things like that.
Yeah, and like upload. I mean, sure, Cape Town had load shedding. I mean, we were like, no internet. And luckily, we were in the CBD and we used to just like drive the hard drive down to the internet cafe because they had enough bandwidth for us to upload the projects in time. But sorry, so I don't want to hijack
the
story.
But it's interesting because I think we both were around that time that it made kind of remote living for business people.
And it's a very interesting topic because it changes the way families work.
Yes.
So as I told you earlier, I don't have to drive to the office because I can do my job from home. And luckily my business partner, Stephen, allows me to.
Yes.
And they produce their online banners in the office. And I can just do what I do here and I get to see the kids.
Yes.
And it's a blessing. But it's also very dangerous because sometimes you kind of tend not to close the door and finish work, right? Because it happens on the cell phone. And
yes.
It kind of carries on and it mustn't.
Yeah. It's definitely a big issue with home, with, you know, working from home. But the positives for me far outweigh them.
Of course. And if you know it, you must just be disciplined. Yeah. So you moved to Costa Rica.
Yes.
You had this business running already. You didn't know you were going to be able to run it.
No.
It happened to work.
Yeah.
And then suddenly 6 months were up and then you guys decided what?
We just kept on pushing it back. We said, let's just stay. It was never, let's stay another year or 2 years.
Yeah.
I think it was, let's just stay another 6 months. We're happy.
Wow.
In fact, I think the birth of my second child kind of forced us to stay a little bit longer because we decided, let's just have the baby here.
Yes.
And the hospitals were amazing.
We're good.
Really, really good.
It's very American, hey?
Very American. We could afford to have it done privately, which we wouldn't have been able to do in the UK.
No.
So that was really nice. And then other things, you know, we could afford to have a nanny. But we lived a very simple life. We lived in a wooden house with a tin roof.
Yeah.
We had to drive an hour once a week to go and pick up cash because there was no ATMs and no card machines. And there was nothing to do apart from surf and yoga and live in nature and the environment.
But you still worked on the same business, TBI.
Still worked on the same business.
Yeah,
And, you know, the head office was still in the UK. So yeah. I got very used to waking up very early, 4:35. I started my day at 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
So actually, I didn't find the early mornings with the kids too much of an issue. That was that was very easy for me.
So by 11, your workday is done, or 12.
Yeah, pretty much.
And you have a whole day with the kids. It's amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. And so much time with the kids. You know, I think you hear as a parent all the time, they're going to grow up so fast.
Yeah.
Everyone tells you that. And my God, they do. But I can, hand on heart, say I was with them for 8 years when they were all, for a lot of their
childhood. That's why I really wanted to speak to you, because this is so unique that you actually managed to, and with a, you made a conscious effort and decision to actually do this.
Yes.
And I told you before the show, almost every dad, actually every dad I spoke to so far, has said one of the key insights is spend time with your kids with intent.
Oops. Yes.
And it's so important. It's obvious.
Yeah.
But in today's times, it's also easy to kind of forget or push it out. And yeah, you can't get the time back.
Well, it is obvious, but I think for most people, it's impossible.
It's impossible.
Or extremely hard.
Yeah.
And I feel incredibly privileged and lucky. I have got to say right now, I did not move to Costa Rica saying I'm moving there
for the kids.
For the kids.
Yeah.
It was for selfish reasons.
Yeah.
But very quickly, you know, I fell into a wonderful lifestyle arrangement where I could wake up, play with the kids, go for a swim, walk down to the beach. Every evening as a family, we'd walk down to the beach at 5 o'clock for an hour and a half, and other families would come out of the rainforest.
Wow.
This is when the community would meet, and we'd sit there and you'd watch the surfers and the sun would set and the kids would play, and they still talk about it now. They say they can all remember it, even the youngest one who was only about one or two.
Would you go back? Can you go back in the current situation? I mean, of course you can, but
I could,
is it an option?
But I wouldn't.
You would not?
No.
You'd spoil them. Yeah.
So we left. I wouldn't go back for the reasons that we left.
Yeah.
As wonderful as it was, for us, many of our friends have chosen to stay there. But for us, it wasn't where we wanted to bring up children.
Okay.
I think also I was getting a little bored. We were lived in quite a remote part. There were no decent schools. Good healthcare was a day away.
So the first 3 years of school of your oldest daughter were homeschooling then?
It was a mixture between a local school and homeschooling.
But you need to substitute schooling.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So my wife did a lot of that, which I think she really enjoyed.
We talk about this at the moment all the time, because the plan's always been to travel for 3 years from 2020 to, and then 3 years, which kind of gives it's the last window before the kids go to school or have to go to school. And the first year I can homeschool, really. Yeah. So that's very interesting.
Yeah.
You said another thing. Why didn't you want to bring up kids in that environment? Because of schooling or the community, or what? It's too remote? You think that's not real life? Or what was the reason?
So in my opinion, I think it's the most wonderful place in the world to bring up children from birth to about the age of 6 or 7.
Yeah.
But as I said earlier, there is nothing to do.
You were there by Witch's Rock, eh?
No, we were actually in Santa Teresa.
Santa Teresa.
Yeah, or Malpais. There was an area called Malpais. So you can surf or do yoga.
Yeah.
And I believe that's still pretty much the case now.
Yeah, of course. More Americans.
So where we lived actually was probably the most diverse community in Santa Teresa, which was really cool. In fact, the first school that my eldest went to was a Jewish school.
Yeah.
And I say a school, it was someone running a school out of their house.
School.
Yeah. But we chose to leave because my, think we just wanted to give the kids more opportunities. If they want to become a yoga instructor and a surf,
do that in Cape Town.
And also it should be their choice.
Yes.
Not ours, because that's how we want to live.
Yeah.
So we really wanted to give them more opportunity. I was also getting very bored. And this was about the time, funny enough, that podcasts really started to hit.
Yeah.
Hit. And I started listening to a lot of entrepreneurial podcasts. So Stanford Thought Leaders was one that I was really interested in. And I suddenly, potentially, I think maybe have these delusions of getting back into entrepreneurship and becoming this really amazing, successful businessman.
Yeah.
And kind of networking with like-minded people. And I had this dream of setting up another business and kind of turning it into a $50 million company or something like
that. Yeah, it comes with giving up lifetime, yeah?
It does. After 8 years, we decided to leave. And we were all very happy on the decision to leave. And it felt about the right time. Funnily enough, my wife's from America, I'm from England. We decided to try England again. And we moved back for a couple of weeks to Devon, which is a beautiful part of the UK. But we went in September and it rained every day, as it does in Devon. Yeah. Devon's very beautiful. It's also the wettest county.
It didn't last more than 2 weeks.
Well, actually, funny enough, when I was living in Costa Rica, I traveled here to Noordhoek, where I live now. So we can see it across the ocean. And it's a beautiful place. And I remember going back to Costa Rica and I said to Jenna, I said, I found this place. I think it's perfect for us. I said, it's got the ocean. It's got animals, which she loves. The environment's got tons of things for the kids. It's got all the hobbies and activities that we really want them to get engaged with. She said, I'm not moving to South Africa. It's too far away. It's too dangerous.
Costa Rica.
Well,
not Nicaragua. No, sure. Yeah. No, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. And anyway, we, 2 weeks in England, looked at schools, looked at houses, plan was to move there. And just by coincidence, we had to come out here for a couple of weeks holiday. One day here.
It was done.
She said, I don't want to move to England. I want to move here.
Yeah, she's right.
Yeah. And that was it. And then we packed up the kids. And one of the things I'm most proud of, and I think this explains a lot about what our life was like in Costa Rica. When we left Costa Rica after 8 years, we left with 6 suitcases.
Yeah.
A family of 6.
Wow.
And we just didn't really have many possessions. There was no need there.
Tell me your values around this.
So my values. I have a very big issue with what I see as almost unstoppable commercialization, consumerism.
Consumerism.
And actually, the older I get, I find it harder and harder to handle. I mean, the effects on our environment, the effects on our children, this kind of insatiable thirst just to have more and more and more, and the supposed satisfaction that they get from a new pair of shoes or the latest iPhone, I think is unhealthy. It's unhealthy for them and it's unhealthy for our planet.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean,
I mean, and in Costa Rica where we live, there were no shops.
Yeah.
We had no TV. They never saw an advert. They didn't know what pocket money was. There was nothing to buy.
Did you have internet or did you have to drive to town?
No, we did have internet. So when we arrived, it was dial-up.
Yeah.
Very slow and intermittent. And then we eventually, you know, got some...
So we were totally parallel. So yes. Same here. I had dial-up 24K modem. Yeah, I think it's probably a wooden modem when you have to turn the wheel.
Yes.
And then we had ADSL, and then we had DSL, and then double DSL line, and we spent fortune. I mean, we were flying in our own servers at the time from Germany because we didn't have, the server was remotely controlled from Germany with our service, our admin.
Yeah.
Literally, we had to switch lines because they were capped from data.
Yes.
And there was something that he set up so that Telkom wouldn't notice how much data we would use. And that's the only reason we have a company, because we had unlimited internet.
Yeah.
So thanks to Telkom here. tell me something. You were talking about saying sorry earlier in your in your advice to yourself.
Yeah.
Can you talk around that and how your perception is, or how your stance is on how you should treat children, and what we discussed earlier.
Yeah, sure. I know that as a parent, I'm going to be wrong a lot. I'm going to make mistakes. I find it hard to say sorry. I also believe that that emotional intelligence is one of the biggest gifts that we can give our children, particularly when we look at what the future might hold for them. I also desperately want deep, meaningful conversations with my children. And with teenagers, that's not a particularly easy thing to have. And I think
You're about to have two teenagers.
Yeah. Feels like I've got three sometimes.
Yeah.
And I have found by explaining why I'm wrong, shows vulnerability. And in the times that I've done that, it has actually been the catalyst for some really great conversations.
Yeah.
Precious conversations. And goodness me, I look at those conversations as one of the biggest gifts as a parent. Probably even more than shared experiences, actually. Just those conversations when you really, really connect.
Do you have a structure for this that you can share, or like a check-in or something where you sit down and you...
I really don't. It's I try and do it quickly. So if I raise my voice, I'm unfair, I will walk away. I meditate. So I take some deep breaths to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
And I remind myself, I guess there's a bit of a process. I remind myself of the benefits of saying sorry because of the past experiences of doing that. And that helps me walk into the room a little bit sheepishly, knock on the door, sit on the bed and say, look, I'm really, really sorry.
Go away, Dad.
But you mean... But I haven't had that yet.
Yeah, okay.
And...
because they understand that you mean it. Because you don't just do it to manipulate the situation.
I hope so.
That's why.
And I really do mean it.
Yeah, of course.
And I think they probably know that I mean it because I explain why I acted the way I did.
Mm-hmm. So you take them serious and they feel that.
Yes. I treat them like an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we were talking earlier. That's not to say that you should treat your children like an adult in every situation.
Yeah.
I personally believe that when it comes to having conversations, particularly about emotions, it's very, very important to treat them as adults.
Yes.
Critical.
Especially because kids' emotions are much stronger. They come unfiltered.
Yes.
If I look at my babies, it's a big thing for them, right?
Yes. So
I can't have my pocket knife. Sorry. It's a perfect example. Yeah. He goes off, but he really wants the knife. It's a big thing for him.
Yeah.
But it's a real emotion.
Yes. Yeah, I know for sure.
Yeah. And then I guess as teenagers, that emotion will be magnified.
Yes, it seems to be growing.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Almost on a monthly basis, actually.
Okay. Okay. And then how does it go down? You say, I'm sorry, this is the reason why I did this.
Yeah.
And they get to speak and say why... how the situation was, or how does this just flow? Just tell us a bit.
Yeah, sometimes I think I have to do most of the talking.
Yeah.
And then I then ask, you know, how does this make you feel? Do you understand why I might have lost my temper, said this? And those types of questions start bringing up very interesting conversations. Things about, you know, being kind to others and how it can be difficult to be kind. And so it can be quite interesting. So for example, if one of my children has been mean to another one, which is actually my trigger point, I think as parents, we all have our trigger points.
This.
And for me, I can handle a lot. When they're mean to each other, I lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do snap, I'm ashamed to say.
Mm, I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody does.
Yeah.
Everybody does.
Yeah. And I shout.
Mm.
And I say things I don't want to say.
Mm.
Which makes me feel incredibly bad inside. But then going to talk to the child and explaining that I'm really sorry I was mean to you.
Yeah. The thing that I really detest the most.
Yes.
So that's why it's even more difficult.
Exactly. Yeah, but this is why I did it. So instead of trying to have a conversation about what they did wrong,
yeah,
which wouldn't be healthy. And I think immediately they would shut it off. They would see it as an excuse, as you said earlier, allows us to have a conversation about the very thing that I got angry about in the first
place. So a lot of dads told me this truth in principle that you're explaining is that, or what I get from it, is what I hear is that if you don't act as you say, how can you ask your children to do so?
100%.
Right? And that's a universal truth. It happens with taking drugs or behaving in a certain manner or not lying or sticking to values or I don't know how you want to eat or not eat. It's very true because, you know, I see the same at work. You tell someone to do something, you don't do it.
Yeah.
It's very different than asking someone to help you, but they see you pulling your weight as well. It's just the same.
Goodness me. They are always watching.
Yeah, they're watching.
I mean, I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
Even the grumpy teenager with the headphones on and a face buried in a book, they somehow see and hear everything. It's like a, you know, another skill that they have.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
And now, so just to continue where we left it. So you moved back to Cape Town.
Yes.
In Northoek.
Yeah.
And that's where you've been since?
6 years ago. So.
6 years. I can't believe I've never seen you in the water.
I think
where you surf?
So here, but also down at Northoek Beach. The Hook or Sables kind of in between there.
Okay.
I like.
Yeah, I never surfed there.
But my office is in Westlake. So.
Okay.
I'm on a longboard more and more these days as well. Yeah.
And do you go to the office these days, or are you able to work from home?
Well, so that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
So in Costa Rica, I got very passionate about work-life balance and what that means, not just for myself, but for my employees. And when I moved to Cape Town, I moved because I wanted to step down from the company GVI that we've been talking about earlier that I've been running now for about 15, 16 years. It was all I'd ever done. It was my first job.
Still exists, hey?
Still exists today.
So if people want to go and visit these amazing places,
they can.
GVI is the place.
GVI is the
place. What's the domain?
It's gvi.co.uk.
Okay.
Or gviusa.com for the North American market.
Okay.
And that's an amazing company. Love working there. Amazing people. But I was about to hit 40. And I wanted to see if I could do something different. So I decided to take some time out. And so I decided to have like a mini sabbatical. And I was getting stressed with all the other stuff getting in the way. And I felt like that my sabbatical was being clouded around by admin. And the trigger point was a Saturday morning. And I was working on some stuff. And I looked out my window. And I saw my 3-year-old son kicking a football into an empty net by himself.
Mm.
And I thought, oh my God, you know, what are you doing, firstly, and how do you make this stop? Because soon they're going to grow up and they're not going to want to hang out with you anymore.
Yeah, they move on.
They move
literally,
on. Yeah. It was a really sobering moment. And I put a ad out in a paper. I was talking to Jen and my wife about it, and she said, well, why don't you get a PA? A personal assistant. And I was working from home at the time and I didn't want anyone coming to my house. So I put an ad out on Gumtree and said, CEO seeks part-time PA. And I had all these amazing applications come in. I thought, hang on a minute. There's a business. There's a business here.
Yeah.
<Uh-oh>.
Sure,
oh dear.
Shiny.
Yeah. And it was the shortest sabbatical in history.
Yeah.
And I formed a company called A-Virtual, which supplies virtual personal assistants from Cape Town to predominantly businesses in the UK. We've just launched in Germany and the Netherlands.
What's the domain if people need a virtual assistant?
Yeah, it's avirtual.co.uk.
Avirtual.co.uk.
Yeah. And
I need a virtual assistant, I told you.
You do, big time. More than anyone I've ever met, actually.
We have to talk again.
Yeah, we do.
And then?
And then it exploded.
Yeah, which is the blessing and the curse, right?
Exactly. So I was 40 years old, passionate about work-life balance, and I decided to set up a business about work-life balance. And if you go to our homepage, you'll see a video of parents with their kids.
Yeah. That's what you're selling time.
That's
right?
What we're, that's what you're we selling, were selling, you're selling time. Time to take back, yeah. To spend it on the things that matter.
Exactly. Amazing.
It was amazing, apart from I wasn't...
It cost your time.
It cost my time.
Yeah.
And I was probably the unhappiest I've ever been in my life. So I'm not complaining. I'm very pleased to have a successful business. But it was very challenging and we scale very, very fast.
You're doing this business with a partner,
with
hey?
A partner, yeah. And the initial idea was to allow people, the PAs, to work from home. Mm-hmm. And I was very passionate about that because there is a huge community, not just here in South Africa, but globally, yeah. Of generally mums who have had jobs and have gone home to bring up children.
Yeah. That's part of my whole topic was being dad, because mums are a big disadvantage when it comes to having kids and work.
Huge. Yeah. Huge disadvantage. And many, many mums, and I employ 110 now in Cape Town, and generally a lot of them don't want or don't need a full-time job.
Yeah. But they're super skilled at the same time.
I know. And they're just sitting there not using their skills. They want to use their brains again.
Yeah.
As the number one thing, it's not the money. They want to use their brains again, and they want to learn.
Yeah, not just talk baby talk. 15 hours a
day. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But we made a mistake, and we felt that because the business was scaling so fast, we weren't able to learn from our PAs what was going wrong. So we brought everyone in house, and then I had an office full of people. Which is not something I've ever had before.
Yeah.
And all the problems that come with lots of...
You were the CEO?
I was the CEO.
Were you co-CEO?
I was the CEO. My partner is more of an advisor.
Okay.
And it was very, very tough. I started going to the office very early, coming back late, not exercising, not meditating, eating badly. All the things that...
Yeah, it's a pattern. I see a big... Playing well with six suitcases off to Costa Rica.
There is a pattern, and I think it's you know, we talked about it earlier. I think you said earlier something that you share that, you know, when you get out of balance. Anyway, for me, when I get out of balance, I take on bad habits.
Same here. Same here. I go to extremes. So
yes,
drink way too much. Drink nothing. Surf not at all. Surf very big waves. Train 7 times a week plus. Yeah. Running in the evening. Not run at all. It's difficult, that balance kind of.
And I think a lot of entrepreneurs are like that.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes us great entrepreneurs, actually. Yeah. Business size scaling. And then we, as you well know, from high growth comes great risk. Mm-hmm. It's the easiest way to go bankrupt.
Oh, of course.
And we very nearly did. But we made a decision to move to a home-based model. And actually, and that's taking everyone from the office back to a home-based model again. And it wasn't so much actually the kind of, you know, running out of cash that scared us. I'd reached the end. I said, I can't go on running this business anymore. It's against my values as a person. It's against my values for my staff, and it's against my values for me. I'm not seeing my family. There's no work-life balance here. I'm not giving it to my staff. There's nothing about what I think is important. But this was about 1.5 years ago, and we moved everyone to a home-based model. And it's funny, this business is still growing well. I've still got, you know, the same issues, but I've suddenly got my life back. I mean, we still have an office of 20, 30 people in, you know.
Yeah, like admin.
Admin.
You're running 100 people remotely. They are all remote.
Yes.
And it's super interesting. They're all remote.
Yeah. Yes.
And they can be with their families.
Yes.
Being mums and dads.
Exactly.
But work.
Yeah.
And they probably perform better than at the office because they know that if they lose this job, they lose this opportunity of being with the kids, actually. So it works in your advantage.
They perform so much better.
Amazing.
I mean, if I showed you the data, it is incredible.
It's not so incredible to me. I work probably much more than other people that would do my job at the office because I don't have to commute 1.5 hours each way. I won't be interrupted unless I, you know, pick up the phone and I can just work productively. And if I want to go for lunch next door and sit with the kids, I can.
Yeah.
And that makes such a big difference for me. And that's a big motivating factor. So I can very well believe that those mainly moms work hard because they know that this is a big opportunity.
And I think I often think about why don't more people do it?
Yeah.
And
because for managers, it's difficult to trust. I think trust and like people think because I can see you, you're working.
Yes.
Doesn't matter, like, you know, they're hanging on Facebook or whatever is going on in their head, but I can see them, so they must be working. But that's not the case.
It's not the case at all.
Yeah, at all. It's a new model, really, I think. I mean, the last, 5-10 years, really, people look at it, and it's difficult from a control perspective, I guess, for managers.
I think that's exactly what it is. It's control and trust.
Yeah.
But they did a study. It was in Sweden. Was it Sweden who tested out a 4-day work week?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And they're much more productive.
Much more productive. And actually, interestingly, get exactly the same amount of work done.
Yeah.
And when I was looking at the study, it's because the average person who comes into the office to do an 8-hour day actually works for 4 hours and I think it's 26 minutes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Late, lunch, Facebook.
Facebook, chatting with your friends, all that kind of stuff.
Have a coffee.
So we're paying people to come in and not perform for 3.5 hours.
And the thing that gets me the most, everybody has to come in at the same time.
Yeah.
So we make sure that school and work starts at the same time every same day of the week. Yeah. Traffic is bad. You're stuck in traffic. You just sit there unproductively.
Yeah. Yes.
Then you're supposed to be productive. And then you're looking forward to sitting in traffic again. And then you come home and you don't see the kids.
Oh.
Sucks.
And you're tired and you're stressed.
Yeah.
And as we well know, stress has a hugely negative effect on your productivity.
Yeah.
I truly believe that the happier people are, the better they will work. And I think, as you've just said, you know, if you have to rush out the door without seeing your kids, feeling guilty, whether you're a father or a mother, and you jump in your car, you're stuck in traffic for an hour, you go into work because you have to be there at a particular time. I find it difficult. And, you know, companies these days are coming up with all types of things to make people happier in the workforce, the ping pong tables and the bars, which drives me insane. And actually a little bit mad because I think it's just complete and utter rubbish. I don't think it works. But actually just trusting people to get the work done, letting them make their own decisions about when they can work. I understand there's some jobs that this can't happen, but many, many can. Treating people like responsible adults who can make good decisions, who are going to do a good job off their own back without someone looking over their heads, in my opinion, I've seen it with my company, leads to improvements everywhere from staff retention to productivity to just general culture.
But a lot of companies, some companies, well, there's even a list now in top 50 most desirable companies to work for as a dad or mom are starting to get it. So for instance, Patagonia. Yvonne wrote this book, Let My People Go Surfing.
Yes.
I would love to win them as a sponsor for this thing here.
Awesome.
They are doing this kind of stuff, you know, where you get like more free time and we really, well, not free time, time where you work, but you work independently and you're not a child. We're not policing you. You just get your work done.
Exactly.
You know, and big companies are starting to do it in Silicon Valley, a lot of us, because you are... But we're deviating a bit from the topic.
Yes.
But you are paying, you know, you're paying high salaries for people who are competent. And then what? And then you want to treat them like a child.
That's
okay, what do you expect?
Yeah.
You know, they get a good paycheck anyway. So especially the next generation is going, okay, what else am I going to get?
Yeah.
Time, self-realization.
Yes.
Will I work with sloths who are electrocuted?
Yes.
Because that's what I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
And is it meaningful?
Yeah.
Okay, it's not meaningful. You're going to put me in a cubicle. You're going to have to pay me a very high salary.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not going to stick around anyways because I get a high salary every week.
I think it's changing. I think young people are saying no to the higher salaries in these situations and accepting less money for freedom, flexibility,
yeah,
and things that they can choose in their
passion. I do.
Yeah.
So how do you teach your children that topic? Or how do you engage with that topic?
To be honest, I haven't done it yet.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a little bit about business and entrepreneurship. And funny enough, my wife and I had a chat the other day about whether or not we should gently push our children to become entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
I'm not sure my wife's that keen on the idea of our children becoming entrepreneurs.
She knows the ups and downs.
Goodness me. She knows it.
You're going to have a big I'm sorry session when they're 30. I made a small mistake. No, I don't think so, actually. No. I think being an entrepreneur is the only way I won't be employed.
No. No, I mean, I couldn't do either. And funny enough, I was talking to my son the other day. In fact, you'll love this. On our way for a surf on Saturday morning, my son goes, "Daddy, I'm the luckiest boy in the world." And I said, "Why is that? Why is that, Harry?"
And he's eight.
He's eight. And he said, "Well, because you're your own boss, it means you can choose how to spend your time, which means you can always come and spend your time with me."
Wow, that's very special.
Yeah. So, yes.
And then he dropped in on you.
That's going to start coming. Very soon, yeah. Very soon.
Okay. Wow. Richard, what else do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I think I've shared most things. I mean, what in your opinion, you've talked to a lot of dads. Are there any lessons that you can share with me? Kind of snippets of wisdom for the other talks.
So a lot of it you've said that I hear, lot of it that I hear from other dads, you've said already, it is spending time with intent, making sure that you don't lose out on that time because it's literally lost. One big learning for me today was the apologizing to your kids, because of course you make mistakes just as well. And if you apologize to any human, it helps, right? Even if you just acknowledge that him or her position is valid.
Yes.
You don't have to give up your position. Just, sorry I acted this way. I still have my position, but it wasn't right. And now we can talk about it, because you're kind of you're making the playing field equal, right?
Yes.
They're allowed to have a voice again.
Making that playing field equal is a great way of looking at it, actually.
So I spoke to a very, very inspiring dad, Warren Rustand. You might know him from EO. You're incoming EO Accelerator.
Yes, I am, yeah.
So we're going to be on the board together.
We are very much looking forward to it. Yeah. I think our first trip as board members is to Macau.
I'm doing my EO on the 12th.
Yes.
So Warren has only round tables in the house because at the table, everybody's equal. Right, of course, they are the parents.
Yeah.
But to give you context, he has 7 children and 19 grandchildren. Blimey. And all of his children have moved back to the farm. They have a big farm and built their own house.
Oh, wow. That would be my dream as a parent.
That is my proof that he has actually managed to bring up kids that want to spend time with him.
Yeah.
Because they don't have to move back to the land, right? Yeah. So the things that he shared were, for instance, round table, which signifies the fact that everybody's equal.
Yes.
They have a regular talk with one of the children, they are old now, they are adults now. They had a chair where they would sit down with the child and really do a proper check-in, like, what's going on in your life? How are you? And not just sucking the child dry, but also sharing back, right? Because, like, sometimes our kids come back from school or kindergarten, and you know, how was school? How did he say? How was this? How was this? And you're really just sucking this information out of this child.
Yeah.
But it's not a two-way.
Also, you're not actually getting to the depth of anything.
At all. Getting information out.
And normally, if my children are anything to go by, how was school?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh,
what do you do? Nothing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Funny enough, talking about tables, one of the big things that we do is that family meals we find are the best way to have conversations. And I love to cook. I can't much during the week, but I love to cook at the weekend. So every Sunday, in England anyway, we have something called a Sunday roast. I don't know if you do that in Germany.
Yeah.
And it's not about just the meal, it's about the preparation.
Mm-hmm.
So I bring in my eldest daughter to help me make the gravy. The gravy is kind of our thing. And we have, everyone has their kind of role to get the meal together. And that's a fun kind of thing to do as a family. And then we sit down and we eat. And as we're talking, actually, a friend of mine in the EO told me this. She said, we asked everyone to go around the table and talk about their highs and their lows of the last week and of the last year. And what's so interesting about this is, as a parent, sometimes you don't really know what's affecting your child.
Yeah.
Or what's making them really happy.
Yeah.
And we started this a couple of months ago, and we've had great conversations with it. Initially, they were particularly the teenagers, you know, rolling their eyes and going, "Oh God, this is so embarrassing," you know, type of thing. But once they get started, they can't stop talking. We actually have to kind of manage the whole thing. And I'm very, as I was talking about earlier about, you know, saying sorry, anything that can generate deep, meaningful conversations with your children. And I think it's finding those things that work for you and your child.
Yeah.
I read a book the other day that said...
what is it called?
I can't remember. I'll have to send it to you. It was something, it was about bringing up teenagers. I should have got it before I came here. But one of the best ways to find out what your kids are up to is to always offer to drive them back from parties.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've heard this before, but...
Why? Because they've had a couple of beers and
I certainly hope not.
In Vino Veritas.
I certainly hope not. But I did it the other day. So I went to pick up my 14-year-old daughter from a disco. And it was a pain because, you know, I normally go to bed at 9:30 and I had to go and pick her up at 11 o'clock at night. And I picked her up and two friends. And it was a half an hour drive. And they sat in the back and I sat in the front. And the stuff they talked about, my God. I mean, for some weird reason, they forget that you're there. And they were talking about boys and what other girls are up to and all these types of things. There is no way.
No, they would have never tell you.
No, basically.
So that's
no
a good life hack for all
It's a great hack. I really, really recommend it, as annoying as it can be.
I will remember that.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Well, you'll be doing a lot of driving then, huh?
Yeah. I know. Yeah. So another thing I hear is... you touched on it now, structured dinners.
Yes.
So there's a good book called The Boy Crisis by William Farrell. He will actually be on the show as well.
Okay, awesome.
And it's really valuable to read. So it's very much around fathers and boys, fathers and their sons.
Okay.
The same applies for daughters, of course, but he wrote about fathers and sons. And he talks about what it does to sons when the fathers are absent. And it's devastating. He states a lot of facts and studies, and it's really a big problem because we have this global epidemic of absent fathers, right?
Are you talking about divorce or actually just work?
Well, divorce or working yourself you know, into a situation where you're not there as well. It's a form of absentism, isn't it? Because you're not there.
Absolutely.
Divorce, yes. Can't remember. I think it was in the States. More than 50% of marriages are actually dissolved within X time.
And also, I think you can be absent even when you're there.
Of course.
And I think this is...
talk about cell phones.
Yeah. And also, I think as entrepreneurs, it's something we have to be very, very careful about. I know in EO, of which we're both a part of, in our forum, one of the most kind of common things that comes up is the desire to be more present when you're with your kids.
Yeah.
I hear it time and time and time
so
again.
So Warren, literally, when you visit his house, Warren Rostand, he will ask you to kindly... leave the phone by the door. Yeah. They have a basket for them.
Yeah.
I did a podcast yesterday with Florian Jung. He's probably the most progressive windsurfer around the globe. He's number one or two in Germany for the last 8 years, and he's been in the top 15 for the last, it's about 8 years globally in windsurfing. And obviously, so he's an athlete and he thinks a lot about intent.
Right.
Because if you want to play at that kind of level, you need to... you need to underpin your results with action, right?
Yes.
So he'll have a certain plan and that's how he executes his training and then only then he can get his results. So what he said is when he's with his son, he also works digitally, right? Because he's traveling with the wind and he needs to communicate with the sponsors somewhere around wherever they are, in Germany, whatever. He's now in Cape Town for 3 months. So he works digital and when he's training on the water, but when he's with his son... no phones at all.
Yeah.
So when he put it in a nice way, when he's with his son, he's in his world.
Yes.
So he totally, the son is two, he totally follows the lead of the boy, going to the beach, looking at the birds, and he's not trying to show them things. from an adult's perspective, but from the child's perspective, the child's taking the lead. And that kind of plays into an interesting other share, because you asked what other dads said. I spoke to Daddy Saturday.
Yeah.
Daddy Saturday, 10 years ago, sat with his child, 2-month-year-old daughter, every 2-month-old daughter every Saturday, because his wife, they're still together. His wife's an entrepreneur, and she had to be away every Saturday. So, you know, he was with his baby, and he's like, okay, what must I do with this baby? As dads often do, because no one teaches you, you know. Girls talk about having kids and being a mom from very young age. They play with little dolls more than boys. And society kind of brings up women to be mothers, right? So that's it's kind of the roles are set in that manner. So he was like, what must I do with this child? So he started spending time very intentionally every Saturday. And they started doing films, and they started to record like whatever they did. And then he really thought about this Saturday coming up, because in the work he's working. In the week he's working. And then the dads around the neighborhood, they noticed. So they joined in. And then suddenly it became a movement. So now Daddy Saturday literally tours the United States, and he teaches dads how to be dads, like what to do. He brought out a playbook now for dads. So you can do this on Saturday here. Yeah. We put up the little trampoline and a plunge pool, and we built something. Or, you know, and it really works. And he said dads just want to, if you give them something, if you help them, if you enable them, they jump at the chance. Because if you think about it, man, you just shared it earlier. You work the whole week. If you're in the provider role, okay, if you're the dad in the provider role and your wife's at home, you work the whole week. You exert a lot of energy working 8, 10, 12 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the weekend, you're expected to come up with all this amazing stuff.
Yeah.
So the first thing he shared was, don't exert all your energy during the week.
Yeah.
Keep some for the weekend, and then make the weekend count.
Yeah.
Right? No phones, no distractions, just the kids.
Yeah.
And do something intentional.
Yeah.
I think that's a powerful thought.
I love the planning aspect of that.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I started doing about a year ago is I put in into my calendar an hour's slot, normally on a Monday or a Wednesday, when I think about my family. And I actually have I use OneNote. I don't know if you've used OneNote. It's like a place where you can write down notes.
Yeah, it's like Evernote or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I have a folder for each child. And I sit down and I think about things that they've said or they want to do. And in each folder are things that one day I would like to do with my child.
That is so cool. I will do that.
And because you sometimes something will come up to you and you'll forget about it, right?
Yeah,
or they're not old enough or whatever. And what I try and do on that day is I go through that folder. I'm extremely organized. And I go through and I actually think to myself, okay, this weekend I need to spend some time with this child or that child because, you know, I've spent more time with the other one. And I look in the folder and see what it is that I could do with them.
Wow.
And that planning for me is critical. If I waited till Saturday morning and I got out of bed and said, okay, I've got to do something with a child, I think my natural kind of knee-jerk reaction would be to do whatever is easiest for me.
Yes.
Which, to be quite honest, is probably to go surfing with my 8-year-old son.
Yeah.
With my teenage daughters, it's much more of a challenge because I don't actually have as many shared interests.
Yeah.
So I need that time to think and plan about what I'm going to do with
And that is so important. Yeah. Warren told me this too. He said, we sat for 2.5 hours. He said, you have to teach outside of your own bias.
Yeah.
Because if you don't teach outside of your own bias, you will literally go surfing with your son every time because that's what comes easy.
Yes.
Richard, I think we've reached an hour.
Wow.
Do you want to, is there anything else that you find important that we must talk about? And because then we should, otherwise we wrap it up.
I think we've covered most things. I think just finally, I think what attracted me to this project, which I think is so necessary in the world, is that I found it incredibly hard becoming a father.
Yeah.
I still find a father hard, but I found becoming a father for the first time extremely, extremely hard. And I what I found particularly hard about it was the how fathers are depicted in media, in whether that's TV shows, magazines, movies, of we kind of, aren't we lucky? Isn't this amazing? It's so easy. And you're kind of there to be this kind of supportive role. And I found it very, very difficult becoming a father. And we've touched on the reasons why. And I felt very, very guilty about that.
I have a strong opinion on the supportive narrative.
Yeah.
Because if I support you, you're responsible, right? Yeah. I help you where I can, but it's your responsibility. Yeah, I support where I can.
Yeah.
And this is very different. Actually, Wahid shared this. You know, Wahid, he's the incoming president again of EO.
Yeah.
And I think it's super wise. He said this 2 years ago when I started with the project. He has a son that's already, or he has a child that's already in his 20s.
Yes,
or something,
that's right.
And now he's got a baby again.
Yeah.
And he said there's a big difference between shared responsibility and supporting your wife.
Yeah.
When you share responsibility, we both have equal say, but also equal responsibility. And when I support you, at the end of the day, you're going to have to tell me what I must do, right?
Yeah.
Because kind of the responsibility sits with you. So what that means, ultimately, the decision making also sits with you. Yeah. So I'm giving up my voice.
Yes.
If I'm just supporting.
Yeah.
That's, I think that's super powerful. That insight is very powerful. So I struggle with this sometimes with my wife. She just assumes the role of making a decision somewhere. And I've shared this before. And I bring it up very quickly. I go like, I'm also just as much a part here.
Yeah.
And if the example child has a fit now because I'm doing it differently, putting him to bed, so it may be. Then maybe she has to leave the room.
Yeah.
Because she says, I can't stand the screaming. I'm like, okay. Yeah. Then you have to leave.
Yeah.
But I will now try this my way.
But it's so hard, isn't it? I imagine it's
hard.
But it's probably easier for us because we're around. Can you imagine trying to do that if you're
you a father, don't stand a chance. It's super hard.
Never.
But I mean, that doesn't mean that you can't be intentional about it.
No.
You know, the time that you do have, you can still be intentional.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. Cool.
Done?
Done.
Richard.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much.
Cheers, huh?
Okay, cool. Super. Thank you so much for listening in. I really hope you liked this session. If you did, please share this podcast. I'm sure you know someone who wants to hear this. Make no mistake, your shares are meaningful and they drive our success. So thank you for sharing. Thanks for listening in. Hope to catch you next time. Have an awesome day.
Test, test, test.